Do you know what? I still don't even know his name.
Chatting Tracks. Let's talk music.
Hey, it's Robbie, Chatting Tracks, Let's Talk Music indeed. Welcome to today's episode. I've got a fantastic interview for you today. I spoke to the wonderful Harkness all the way from Toronto in Canada. He's a myth, he's a legend, he's an enigma, and he's a multi-instrumentalist. His album, The Occasion, came out in 2021, and he's just released new singles now. He's incredible. He's a myth. His music's multi-layered. It's psychedelic, it's pop, it's rock, it's harmonies, it's everything you can imagine, and including the kitchen sink. He was a lovely person to chat to. We had a fantastic interview, and he's agreed to let me play a single at the end of the interview, so stick around for that as well. There'll be links in the description to all his albums and also where you can find him on social media. Check this out. He's fascinating. I'll see you on the next one. Love and peace.
We can. Let's go back a bit. Were your parents into music? Were you heavily influenced by your parents or what they listened to?
1,000,000%. Both my parents, my dad was a really strong musician, and he played in his own little Al Harkness Orchestra. That was and he would arrange for horns and xylophones and things like that and play every weekend until I was about 14. So he'd come home late. It's like, we're sweating. But he played sax and trumpet and trombone and piano and clarinet. Just a crazy little wizard. And he would sit on the stairs and we're kids playing music. And so I could not avoid it. It was just from the moment go, there was music everywhere. And one thing that I vividly remember is him making arrangements for his band. So he'd have his shirt off in the summer, fan blowing at the piano. And I just, hours and hours and hours of seeing dad in the house arranging and writing music. And of course that completely, I really, really don't think consciously I'm trying to follow him. I'm not, dad did it, I'm going to do it, or he did it this way, so I'm going to use horns. I think I just slipped into my father's groove with no effort in the way any child would, I guess. And my mom was an incredible French horn player, and they met at university, music university, and fell in love. Great dancers, and so I couldn't avoid being a musician, I think. And to be honest, I have two brothers and two sisters, and my older brother was the true genius of the family. He was the guy that would hear a commercial on the TV, go to the piano and immediately play it. And he was a freak of nature. So I was the younger guy, not as talented, trying to keep up with him, working twice as hard for years and years. And then he kind of settled and I just kept going with the momentum. And God knows what would have happened if he had really gone for it, but he didn't.
Well, you would have been a duo, surely. But
yeah.
So what sort of albums and music was playing around the house at the time? Was it sort of like chart music? Was it underground music?
No, it was everything. It was everything from Billie Holiday to Miles Davis to the Carpenters to John Lennon to Stevie Wonder to ELO. Like back in the day, my dad, I think that was the first concert my dad took us to, was ELO. And, but he was all over the map. Stravinsky was in the house a lot. I love all that stuff. So as probably like from 6 till 14, he took us to every concert under the sun, including symphonic stuff and big band. And so I'm sorry, my throat, I'm just going to have another chug of my lemon. But yeah, just to wrap that up, I had the most incredible tour guide of music you could ever imagine in my father. And I'm the victim of it, or the result of it, or however you want to put it. I can't stop continuing what he started, kind of thing.
It's amazing. My dad was a musician as well, and I think once you're a musician's son, you can't not be influenced by what's around you. It's impossible.
Absolutely true. Lucky you. What'd your dad do, or what he play?
My dad was a country musician who played drums, so he was a drummer. So not really a musician, as they say.
No. I wouldn't say that, but yeah. Well, do you play instruments yourself?
Not anymore. I used to play drums, but I was never any good. And I got to the point where I realized I was never going to get any better. And I just played for him doing it. I could never improve. And I was like, you know what? And you know, you go to a gig and you set up and the other drummers will be warming up and their warm up will be better than your best. Done.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I've got amazing like we did the gig where nobody watched. We did the gig where everybody left. We did the gigs that were popular. We did the festivals. And I've got the most amazing memories and the best memories of all, you know. So I've got the What's interesting, though, is my dad was obviously a country musician, but I was never really into country music. Was it the same with you? Was you into your dad's music?
I was into his music, yeah, every drop. And he was super educational about it, too. He would sit us down and say, the composer for Jaws ripped off this original piece by Stravinsky from 1926, and he would sit us down and tell us about that. And that, for whatever reasons, there was no rebellion against my dad. And some often you do have that with your parents, but no, it was just, tell me more, Dad. We'd go for drives just one-on-one talking about Coltrane or whoever. He'd also be really frank with me about being a musician, and he would caution me and say, look, I tried, and he didn't necessarily say the words that he failed, but he said 98% or 99.9% of people who try fail. It's a tough road. Just giving you a heads up, you know, do whatever you want, son, but be aware and be afraid. Be very afraid. So he almost mildly tried to scare me off of it with a lot of love, but I always just said to him, no, I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna go for it. I'm gonna never stop and all that kind of stuff. And so far, here I am still doing it, and it is one hell of a grind, as everyone knows. It's just the amount of incredible music, for one, and the amount of musicians doing it, and then you can consider that noise in the big field. It's just so hard to cut through and have anyone find you, or whether you're good or bad or upside down. It's so incredibly tough to get heard out there and get noticed.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, obviously, you had record labels that would do the job for you. Now the internet has opened it up maybe too much, you know. So,
yeah, blessing and a curse. Like, it's fantastic. I met you through it, right? So you can do so much with it, and you can find people. I think ultimately it is a good thing, but it's hard to make a living. I think it's fantastic that there's so many people making music and creating and living that way, and sharing it and meeting people. But I think there's not a lot of coin to go around, and it's most of us have other jobs and all that kind of stuff. So you got to really love it to stay at it. That's for sure.
100%. And what sort of instrument did you gravitate to first? Because you're a multi-instrumentalist. Which one did you sort of pick?
I started with piano, more forced to do it. Like, we were, all the kids were taught piano by my mom. She was the neighborhood teacher and all that. And didn't love it, but would find myself trying to figure out, imagine, six or seven, trying to, I like that. Let's try and do it at the piano. But I'd say guitar for sure. Guitar, I was shown some chords to a Kiss song or some simple Neanderthal song when I was probably 12, and then it was over. It was, you could feel the power immediately, like, what the hell is this thing? And it really, piano is different that way. I never felt the power. Right now when I play piano, I play a little bit, it's definitely, it feels like a rabbit hole to my soul. It's definitely sucks me in, but I think guitar blasts you to the end of the universe kind of thing. It's a different trip playing the different instruments to me.
It's amazing. I was watching an interview with Gene Simmons, and he said someone can play 300 mile an hour, or they can hit one E chord, and that E chord will take your face off. And it,
exactly. It's so true.
It's true. That one big movement at the same time will just do 10 more than, you know, phonetic playing all over the shop. It's absolutely true.
Which, sure. Oh yeah.
So did you start writing at a young age, like song wise? Did you sort of start putting songs together, or did you sort of, was your music journey later, or did you sort of just get day jobs after school and things like that?
No, it was right away. Like, as soon as I started learning the guitar, probably the same month, I was writing stuff. And you would think that everybody would do that, that it's just a natural thing, and some do, some don't. But for whatever reasons, I remember some of the early, so you're learning simple songs by punk bands and the Ramones and things like that. And then I remember going to the cupboard and a glass breaking, like, oh shit, and grabbing the guitar and going, broken glass, and like writing a song about And those were like the earliest things. It would be shit would happen. Then you keep back. And I think one of my earliest songs, maybe I shouldn't mention this, was called Suicide. And I have no idea what the hell a 13-year-old or 12-year-old talking about suicide. And I just thought it was a cool word. And I don't think I knew what the hell it really was. And writing songs that my mom saw, the early ones, her name is Sue. That's stupid shit. But right away, and the way I think it, songs come for a lot of people, and it's really changed for me through the years, but it's you have the first note and somehow the yarn rolls and you see the yarn, you have to chase it, and you really feel you have no choice but to finish this song or follow it. It leads you. So I think I was led really early, come here little boy, follow this string, and it's been like that forever, ever since. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And did you get into bands when you were younger, or did you sort of just stay solo, or?
Bands right away. And I was always, and I think this is a great position to take. In the early days, I was always the worst musician in the bands. And it doesn't mean I was a terrible musician. It just means that these guys were better than me, playing longer than me. And I would then catch up to whoever I was with, usually, unfortunately, because I was really diligent, super, super hours and hours and hours guy. Then I would pass who I was with, and then the guys who are much older in the jazz combo, then I'd go play with them, and you know, and then catch up to them. And you know, so always try and find yourself surrounded by people who are better than you, then attain that, and then feed the next crop to play on. That was kind of my uncontrived technique. It just happened that way.
And what sort of bands were they? Were they rock bands? Were they jazz bands? What sort of thing?
So as you can imagine, the first one was all Ramones and freaking B-52s and God knows, just the raunchiest, simple stuff, bashing things out. And then it got to prog rock, doing Yes and Rush and Bill Bruford stuff. I don't know if you know all that. Mm-hmm. Chocolate Pistorius and Stan Clark. Yeah, and then it headed into more straight jazz stuff and jazz combos and playing. I think, you know, when I was 15, I was like a junior playing with a senior combo and all that kind of head in the jazz world for a while. But I have to say that I love all those musics equally and never considered the jazz a migration or a better place than the Ramones, if you know what I mean. It's just what my fingers were wanting to get to something new and all that kind of stuff. But I think I hit a place, and I could have gone a lot further with the jazz. I don't think I really became that great or anything, but I really went back to Strawberry Fields and the Beatles, and that's where it's like, hold on, I think this is my home, with a little bit of Stravinsky and a little bit of Miles, but I really love sitting in the grass with a melody, just a simple melody. That's it. So I kind of went up and then did a turn back and found a ledge on the mountain. It's like, yeah, this is the oasis for me.
I saw a wonderful interview with Spinal Tap the other day, and they said jazz is an accident waiting to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. I
was going to say, I do have a fantasy about, like right now my music is very, very composed and structured. There's a lot of things playing off of each other, and it needs to be a certain way. And when I play live and I'm looking for a drummer, it's going to be stopping on a dime and very structured. But I have this fantasy of, in a handful of years, if I can even get anywhere, having these crew, I know great musicians, having a crew of wicked improvisers, and having just say, go, let's see what the hell happens with Sugar Bitch tonight, and just do the tunes and let them fucking go crazy on them. And I'll just sing them all the harmony, and the melody will be there, but let's slurp and slide all over. That's what I would love to do that eventually. Just accidents waiting to happen all night long. Really, I think that's the future, but it's a ways away.
It would definitely go there, my friend. So you played in bands for a little while. Was it like, I mean, obviously now you are the Harkness. Was there a lot of bands between you starting and becoming the Harkness?
Tons and tons and tons. I won't date myself, but I've been doing this for a really long time. and been a lot of collaboration bands with, oh, he's a great writer, and well, that's, and learned to, again, you find these writers who appear to be much better than you, and like, wow, you hang out with them for a bunch of years in a band and learn a hell of a lot. So I played as a sideman. There'd be times I'd be in seven bands at once. One would be a Christian rock, one would be country, one would be funk, one would be this. And then you're whittling and writing your own things on the side. I actually came to London, England for a handful of years with a particular, I'm just turning on my phone again, with a particular dude, and met incredible musicians there and played a bunch of gigs and did our best to get signed and had management and did the whole grind. And of course, now I'm back in Canada. But I have to say that I think that a lot of the earlier experiences, which was many different bands, I was always contributing, but with a slightly limited compromised zone. And happily, most of the time. But when I finally came back to Canada, I was like, screw all of that. Got my studio, and it was just, nobody's going to tell me a single thing. At this point, you got to do that for a while. I'd love to collaborate again, but where it was just absolute focus. Nobody, if I wanted a French horn or a tuba, it was coming in there. If I wanted harmony or no harmony, stripped down, and I was like a pig in shit with the studio. I got three microphones and just nothing. And if you listen to any of my music, it's all recorded one person at a time. It's insane if you consider that, listening to some of the tracks, the way it's built up. Really, really screwed up. But I just got to a place where I had to do things my way, did it, and super, super happy with how it's going.
It's an amazing album. We'll talk about that in 1 second. I just want to touch on the growing up in Canada, as you're saying. Was there a massive music scene in Canada? Was there lots of places to play? And is the same nowadays?
I think there might be about the same. What happened was there was an average amount of places to play. It was a great scene because there were great musicians. Without question, there were great musicians on the Toronto scene back in the day. And Canada and Toronto seemed to be extremely open to a variety of musicians from the rest of the world. And I think we had a reputation, along with a few other places, where we would be open to bands before other people would. We really had an open mind. So I feel like we fell in love with a lot of music before everyone else did, depending on who you want to interject there. So it felt like an amazing breeding ground to learn and be. And then it exploded more and more and more venues came up, and then COVID came, and so many have shut down. So it's almost the same now as it was 20 years ago or whenever it was. And which is unfortunate, because it grew a lot, and then now it's in a recovery zone. It's starting to happen again. It's a really cool scene. There's a lot of great people and great musicians right now. But COVID did a number, that's for sure, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's the same as England. A lot of the clubs in England closed down that were just absolutely iconic. And it's just, the climb is there, but it's not a fast enough climb to maybe save some more of them, which is a real shame.
Yeah. And then people get in a bad habit of, it's cozier to watch a Netflix thing than go downtown or to go watch something. And yeah, it's hard to get people out. I mean, I have lots of friends, and sometimes I do really well when I have a show, like, well, right, it's packed. And other times, like, where the hell is everybody? Don't they realize what they're missing? Come on.
So when did you actually become the Harkness itself, as a person, an entity, an image? When did you say, right, this is the road I'm going to go down?
Well, I think that due to circumstances when I was younger and bumping into certain substances and having some crazy, crazy times that, you know, near death's door and all that kind of stuff. I think that's where the Harkness thing was born, but it was years after some real trouble that I had. I'll put it this way. For probably about a decade, I recorded and had no interest in playing live or necessarily sharing anything. And I did most of the Occasion album just, and another pile of songs, just with no intentions, no thought of presenting and stuff like that. And then I guess I was playing it back and thinking, holy shit, I gotta at least give a kick at this can and get out there. And for the music itself, like out of respect for the music type of lines that you tell yourself. And I thought, well, I don't want to go up there with a flannel shirt. I actually don't want anyone to even see me. I want the music to be about the listener, not about me as an individual. And how can I do this? So I basically covered myself up, just covered up. And whether we have another chat another time, it does go deeper into some of that substancey stuff that I talked about. It was really ego-y fuck shit. So to kind of almost exclude the self and all sorts of other, not bullshit, but you can just imagine all the places an artist can go with a look like this. On another level, it's like it being about the listener is that I made the mirror. So if you're looking at me, you're actually seeing yourself and yeah, all that stuff. And so I've got a million little contrived reasons that make me feel like, yes, this is right. This is really right for me. And to be honest, it's wild because I've done so many performances before being like this and it's fun, but this is like Halloween, or Batman or whoever you put this on. And it's so much, you just want to go. It's wild, but it does. And I don't think, if you saw me live, it is like kicks and flares and swings. It's a bit of an absolute circus. And I just feel completely liberated to the point of I'm nothing. So now I'm everything. Nobody can touch this. It's crazy.
It's a wonderful image. Even on your album cover, when you see it, it's a striking image. And I was like, wow, that's so interesting. When you're self-producing, like, and you're multi-instrumentalist and you're self-producing as well, and you sort of said Prince and Todd Rundgren, who did the same sort of things, their influences. How do you go about a single? What do you lay down for us? Drums, piano, guitar? And how do you sort of work out what arrangement you're going to put on it?
Right. So when the song usually comes in a simple form, piano, guitar, vocal kind of thing, and so you've got the melody and chords. I usually will sit on a park bench or lay on a hill and you can arrange it in your head and not in a way that sounds like, oh, this guy's, you can just hear music in your head like anyone does. And so I listen to the song, the future song, could hear the strings, the this, the that, whatever it is. And I write it down just with a pencil, not the notes. I just write, verse is going to be this cluster of instruments. This is going to have this or da, 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 da. And then I follow through with it. And I just, then I write the parts out for the string players or whoever. But it really is, it's a really quiet hill where you hear what seems like a finished song. And then you notate what that is. And I don't break from it. I just do it. I just then, okay, got the template. And if accidents happen in the studio, which they do, and somebody either is warming up and it sounds like I can put that on. So you're open to changes. But usually it's that's that like that. And then the structure is I always start with the drums. And if it's a complicated thing, I'll get a great drummer to come in and play. If it's a simple Neanderthal thing, I'll play it. And in that way, because I don't have very many mics, I'll do the hi-hat first. Then I'll hit the bass drum with a mallet and the snare, one drum at a time. And if you listen to my stuff, it doesn't sound super, it sounds almost like a dysfunctional octopus because it's all, which at first I wanted to correct, like, how can I be, I got to do it better. But now it's like, no, fuck it. Just leave that thing that it is. And then I'll usually play guitar, bass, sometimes sing, and then the musicians on top. Really simple process of build. Some songs are bass, guitar, drums, vocals, simple. And some have about 20 instruments or 20 or more. Sometimes it's just absolute bananas. Depends what you hear on the day.
So when you're self-producing, how do you know when to stop? When do you go, right, that's enough instruments, that's enough, you know, because you could just keep going and going. How do you know when to stop?
I think that I think that maybe in the past, I was so excited to have my own studio and couldn't get enough of, well, let's throw steel drums on and everything. And maybe I overdid it sometimes. I'm still, the jury's out for me on some of that stuff. I know that lately. Hello?
Hello?
Are you still there?
Yeah.
I'm just, my bad. It's just the phone keeps doing its thing. I'll just go back a little bit. Since I got my own studio, I think I might have overdone it and gone crazy with all the instrumentation. The jury's out on whether that's true or not. But even though there's lots and lots of instruments, it's really simple stuff. So the parts that I'm writing for things are whole notes, and they're very, very simple. But as far as knowing when to stop, it's all just that moment on the park bench or the hill. That's it. It's just, if it sounds good in my head, I'm just going to respect that and follow that. But I do see, as I've been writing more, the recent song, All the Things You Are, it's simpler. I think I'm starting to do less. Don't quote me on that, but I think it's getting a little simpler. I'm trying to be polite here, but I got myself off a few times. I still fell in it. And now I'm kind of, can coast with some simpler arrangements, but I'm not trying to do anything fancy or be flary or lots of instruments for the sake of showing like I can do anything. It's just, this is the texture.
Hmm. I get you. Your album came out in 2021, The Occasion. And what I love about your album is it's so, how do you put it? It's a tour de force of music. And I mean that in a positive way, because I didn't know what to expect when I listened to it. And when I did listen to it, I didn't know what was coming next. And that's a rare thing when you've listened to a lot of music.
Wow, good. Great. And
it's wonderful. And there's everything on it, including the kitchen sink. You've got strings, you've got horns, you've got multi-harmony and stuff like that. I mean, especially the song Moonspell with the multi-harmony on it. It's a phenomenal song.
Wow.
It's just an incredible album to listen to. Did you sit down with a direction, or do you, like you were saying, is it just like every song's to be separate, and if it goes together, it does, and if it doesn't, it doesn't?
No, yeah, I had no direction for it. And what was happening was back as I was just trying to chase all the songs that were coming and recording 30, 40 songs simultaneously was what was happening, and with no direction. And then somehow those songs kind of corralled themselves together. And for whatever reasons, as you put your head on your pillow, you start kind of doing these song lists in your head of your body of work and what might, and they just kind of found each other. And I don't know whether that it was the best song list. I think that in some ways I might have shot myself in the foot coming out of the canon with that. I had played it for other local musicians and managers and stuff like that, and they're saying no, don't start the album with that tune, and just simplify things, do the simple tunes, come out of the gates. And I was vehement about I'm coming out of the gate. This is like a take no prisoners. You're either with me or not. You can't get into all of this, screw you. And I don't think it was the best attitude. I had been doing it for so long, and I had a bit of a stick in the mud thing, or this is a bit of a deathbed album. Like, no, it has to be this. And I think my theory was, if they get into this, I've got them, because they've got, there's so much happening. And I know that it was sent to Mojo, sent to a bunch of different places. And we got some reactions that were all like, had I gone with, 2 minutes pop ditties, because I have tons of those, it might have been an easier existence for me. But I really, really love the collection of The Occasion, and I wouldn't have it any other way. But I, hey, artists out there, maybe don't do what I did. We couldn't get through a bunch of doors because I think people could barely get through the first 8.5 minute song.
I mean, I agree and I disagree at the same time, because I think what's interesting is because it's got that at the start, and it's a bit like All Things Must Pass by George Harrison, which starts with a slow number, and you expect him to start with My Sweet Lord, and he doesn't.
Right. Yeah.
come from this really, and that's what I think your album strength is, the fact it's so not how it should be. I love it. It's just
it's
in the perfect way, if that makes it, without being offensive. I think it's perfect. So it's great. For anybody that hasn't heard your music yet, you've been compared to the Flaming Lips and Tame Impala and Jellyfish. And I think the Polyphonic Spree would be another good band to compare you to. It's that sort of multi-layered, huge sounding bands. And they're just, unfortunately, these bands are now really coming through and people are just appreciating them. And I'm sure your album will be one of those that will catch that and they will be behind it.
I hope so. I really do. I mean, there's a lot to mine there. And it's one of those albums that you can listen to 50 times and still find stuff, which I always, as a kid, I always loved the layered treats that you can find in some of the more sophisticated stuff. But yeah, I know that the next album, it's called Child of the Beauty, is got lots of interesting things on it, but it is more compact and it's a bit more of a Harkness jukebox. It's going to be all 3-minute, 2-minute tunes that are just going to hammer at you without a lot of effort for the listener. But if you listen, I still think there's all sorts of tunneling you can do. So it's, and then the next album is called Bulldozer, which I've got lots recorded for too, is going to be some all sorts of different stuff. Yeah. So I've got tons. There's an album after that called Get Back to the Get Go that's all recorded and it's all ballad, all trippy ballads, but not typical.
Amazing. So you cover till 2027 so far.
Yeah, or further. You don't want to know. You don't want to know.
That's amazing. It's unusual to speak to an artist and they've already got the albums planned out, because normally they sort of just develop as they go. It's amazing you've got that sort of set in stone already. It's crazy.
Well, now I do. I mean, I didn't, but I think I just did the... I think when you record for 10 years without intent and you're suddenly sitting on a pile, then suddenly they start dictating groupings. And so that, I think that's what happened.
That's amazing. And are you going to be touring your new album when it comes out?
Yes, but it's a tough one. I've been trying desperately to get in touch with the Lemon Twigs and management and the PR. I've been hassling them, like trying. Let's connect, boys. Like, this is such a hand in glove thing. They're so incredible. I respect them so much. There's the sophistication and simplicity all at once. It's just amazing. And I think that I belong in their company as far as the audience goes. I think that the Harkness opening act for the Lemon Twigs would be freaking incredible double bill. And yeah. So, but I'll tell you this, I've booked a lot of shows on my own and hit the road and you arrive in X city and there's five people there. It is like that at times. I mean, sometimes you get more, but you kind of go, wow, I mean, it's so much effort and promoting and calling everybody and rehearsing. And then you do a tour and it seems like all the only other people watching are the other band, to be exaggerated, but it really is. So I want to tour things, but I really want to do it differently than I have in the past. But that's without a record company or without payola or buying someone off to tour with them. So I'm trying to reach out to peers because I think they will hear what I'm doing and respect it and maybe love it enough to say, we gotta help this guy. I'm gonna give you one example of that for the fun of it, and this goes out to any other artists that may be listening here to maybe inspire them a little bit. Without question, try to approach your peers. If they come to town, hand them your music or do whatever. Do you remember, do you know Roger Manning, who played in Jellyfish? He was one of the main writers and plays with Beck. I handed him some of my music probably 5 or 6 years ago at a side stage door at a Beck concert, because I know Roger, love his stuff. And it was about 6 months later, he emailed me and said, be listening to your stuff, love it, can I hear more? Like, he got back and he's like, what? And so ever since then, I've been sending my new tunes. And every time Beck comes, he gives me free backstage pass, we hang, we talk music. And that's Roger Manning. I'm like, holy crap. And he's so nice and he's respectful. But if Roger hears it, if Roger reacts, I just have to get somebody, Lemon Twigs, to listen and become friends and then hit the road. That's my only hope. I think that's my only hope, because I think doing it out of my mother's basement is essentially what's happening. the results are okay. You really do need a bit of a golden horseshoe.
It's amazing. So if people want to find out more about your material and your albums, where's the best place to look to get that?
So I'm just restarting the phone. Best place to find more Harkness is www.harknessmusic.com. There's tons of stuff there, lots of fun things. And that has links to Instagram. And Instagram is where I guess I post the most. There's other things like Facebook, which I don't do much on. TikTok, I just started. But I'd say Instagram or my website, you'll find things. And on my website, if you want to hear some unreleased stuff and sign up for the email list, I shoot 2 unreleased kooky tunes, which are really fun. And then if I'm playing or anything's going on, you'll hear about it in the group email and stuff like that. Lots of cool stuff.
Thanks. And there'll be links in the description as well for this video so people can find it. Harkness, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting today. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Hey, Robbie, can I mention one last thing?
Of course.
I don't know whether you are aware of this. There's a Harkness movie coming out. It's finished. It's a feature-length film. It's a documentary. And it's made by a production company called Storyline Entertainment, directed by a phenomenal, young, brilliant filmmaker named Maria Marquina. And I got lucky. This could save my soul as well. I bumped into this filmmaker 5 years ago. We've made a film of me in the studio, me hitting the road, the ups, the downs. It's a crazy adventure. And it's going to be hitting film festivals worldwide this year.
Wow.
So I'm trying to cross my fingers on camera. It's a wonderful, crazy film. And it's tons of Harkness music throughout the whole thing.
That's amazing. And you saw him here first. So,
yes, you did.
We'll definitely keep an eye out for that. And when the movie comes out, we'll take a look at that and review it as well. It'd be fantastic.
Wicked.
It'd be great. Again, thank you for today. It's been amazing.
Thank you, Robbie. Appreciate it.
Just dusty mirrors, no one.